This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl is the founder of Planning.com. I'm assuming you're chief executive president, et cetera, and maybe like me, take out the trash?
Exactly.
There you go. Carl, tell us, number one, tell us a little bit about capture planning, and start with your background, though.
Okay. I've pretty much spent my entire life doing proposals, or at least my entire adult life. And like most people in proposals, I'm a bit of a computer geek, have to know how to use the tools, and became a very early adopter of the web. Actually set up my first government contracting website in like 1995. So at some point I was asking myself, how do I sort of combine this, you know, interest in computers and the web and proposals? Had a government contracting related website and had progressed in my proposal career, going from production into writing and proposal management, senior proposal management, and was actually a proposal consultant at the time. And when I set up CapturePlanning.com, that was in 2001. And what I did was I had accumulated a significant amount of material that was tutorials and process guides and handbooks and things like that that I had written. And so I said, okay, well, why don't I put these on the web? And the moment I did that, things started to take off, because at that point in time, there was nothing like that really in existence other than that what I had set up. So people started coming to the website. They were purchasing tutorials and ebooks, and I was getting into to e-commerce. And eventually, I had enough of a library that I set it up as a membership site, so that instead of coming in and having to buy each piece, you could just purchase a membership and then have access to the library. And at that point, it really became a learning tool. It was the sort of thing where you could go to learn about government contracting, proposals, business development. And then about 4 years ago, I looked at all the stuff that all of the content that I accumulated, because a lot of that content deals with problems that people have. Problems in business development, like how do you get technical people, engineers and project managers, able to achieve results in business development when they don't want to see themselves as salespeople. I had a tutorial on that.
So let me stop you there. You're talking about people who are working probably on site for a specific contract, and teaching them how to understand when little nuggets present themselves?
Exactly.
Cool. That's great.
Because
I need a link to that, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, for the on-site staff, it's really about can they identify when the customer has a problem that your company can solve? And they know how to do that. What they don't often realize is that that's the start of business development.
Task order.
Recognizing that the customer has a problem that your company can solve, and then talking with the customer to find out about, you know, what it would take to solve it, and whether they're interested in doing something. And that's how you have a pre-RFP conversation. You don't have to wait until a task order is issued before you don't have to wait until an RFP comes out. It starts with conversations like that.
Cool.
And little things like that can be tremendously helpful to people who are not specialists in proposals or business development. And so, you know, what I had created was a library where people could go and really discover all the stuff that I wish I knew when I started out.
Well, give me an idea. I mean, I've been through your website, but I'm not a member, so I don't get to take a deep dive. Give me an idea of how many articles and other things like that, tutorials that you have at this time, because you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. If you go to captureplanning.com, there are over 300 free articles, and the free articles describe all of the theory and the foundation level stuff. Then, in addition to that, there are over a dozen tutorials, and then there's something that I created and launched a year ago called Prop Library. The membership side of the site grew so large that I ended up spinning it off as its own separate site, and that's called Prop Library. And Prop Library has...
Is that proplibrary.com?
Yeah. It has a complete end-to-end process that you can use if you have no process. You can follow it from start to finish, or you can use it to supplement an existing process to fill in a gap, or you can just use it to figure out what you should do next. So when you're pursuing... When you identify a lead and you're trying to figure out, okay, how do I qualify this lead and turn it into something, and what do I need to do to pursue it? Right then, at that moment, you can use the Prop Library knowledge base to guide you step by step through, and it'll take you from there all the way into the transition into the proposal, and all the way through proposal development to submission. Prop Library has several hundred more items in the knowledge base to sort of to document that process, but it also combines it with online training and tools, all of the document-related tools, because Prop Library is really more of a tool than a document site. What it is a combination of online training and performance and process. But it's not like other tools that you've used where it's trying to automate things for you. Instead, it's trying to help you figure things out and make the right decisions and do that faster so that you get to a better product.
Okay. Now, your library, does it matter if a company is selling a product or a service, or does it apply to all of the above?
It applies to both products and services. Services being very different in how they get marketed and what it takes to prepare a proposal. It really depends on the nature of the product. If it's a pure commodity,
then it's not there. Yeah.
Yeah, then the whole proposal process really is more of a quotation process.
Right. And in the age of LPTA, you better have a sharp pencil.
Especially if you market your commodity as if it was a commodity.
Right. But I was thinking more on the high-end product side, you know, like the higher-end storage devices, higher-end computers, that type of thing.
Yeah, if you're positioning your product as a solution, if you are doing any sort of integration or customization of the product, then you have to go through that whole process of matching what you have to the customer's needs, and then aligning your offering with the kind of benefits and results that they're hoping to achieve. And that's the sort of thing where people, especially technical staff, sort of stumble. It's, you know, talking about that benefits and results stuff. They know the product, but how do you communicate, you know, all of that benefit stuff?
Yeah. Let me ask a slightly different question here. Because of the changes, LPTA, the strategic sourcing, the leaning of the government towards fixed price contracting, how often do you have to update some of the things in your library? Or is what you're dealing with largely not impacted by those issues?
I haven't had to go back and change anything. I have added stuff because some things become even more important. For example, with LPTA, to market yourself as low price technical acceptable, you have a choice. Do you market low price or do you market technically acceptable? The trick to LPTA is to help the customer define what technically acceptable means. And, you know, from the customer's perspective, they really want to make sure that a vendor can't lowball on price and deliver something that's not going to meet their needs. So it's important from the customer's perspective to get the right definition of technically acceptable. But if you're the contractor, it becomes critically important if you want to make sure that you are able to bid the right value in your offering, and to be able to talk about and present the value of your offering. So the portion of the process that starts pre-RFP and deals with helping the customer, you know, define their own requirements and ultimately prepare an RFP, that becomes even more important. So we added detail to our process related to that so that people could make that connection between topics like influencing the RFP and, you know, the new popular acronym LPTA.
Okay. Hold that thought. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, WFED 1500 AM. I'm with Carl Dixon today. Carl runs CapturePlanning.com, possibly the largest repository of business development proposal writing material on the web. There's a lot of free stuff there, but it is a member site. If you'd like to take a deep dive, I suggest you take a look at the site, CapturePlanning.com. Carl, when we were talking in the first segment about training your on-site people, we're talking, you know, making sure they understand when they see something that's possibly more business for the company, does LPTA come into play there as well? If they see a problem issue, or is that kind of tangential?
It's more detail that they need to be aware of, because with LPTA now, you're not just simply looking for a problem that the customer has that your company can solve. Now you're looking for a problem and need to take proactive action to help the customer define not simply the technical requirements, but what minimal requirements, you know, they really need to have so that you can give them, you know, the highest value solution that you can. One of the things that people with engineering backgrounds tend to do when they get involved in business development and proposals is they really, really want to create the right solution for the customer. They're driven to it, And when they see the RFP, especially an RFP that's written with an LPTA evaluation criteria, and they see that giving them the best possible solution is a good way to lose, you know, that's depressing. And the way you avoid that is in your initial conversations with the customer. And so a simple discussion like this with those staff, so that they're aware of it, so that when those conversations start or when they're talking about possibilities or things that could be done with the customer, they can put them into the right context.
Cool. Now, among the services, that I know what your website provides, but do you provide hands-on training for clients as well?
Very rarely. I do enough of that so that I can keep my chops up and make sure that the content on the site is you know, current and advanced and high quality. But we've actually been doing more of that in the last year because we've moved into corporate subscriptions, where Prop Library isn't just something for individuals, it's something that whole companies can use, because it sort of changes the whole economics of business development training. Contractors have a real problem when it comes to how do you train everybody who gets involved in business development. Most of them end up not training everybody and just trying to learn on the job. But with Prop Library, it actually becomes economical to provide guidance and inspiration to everybody involved in business development. So it really changes the whole approach and way you think about training. But with our corporate customers, they require a lot more services, because they'll, you know, when you're doing a corporate-wide rollout, they'll want help with that. And when they do, we provide it.
Okay, cool. Because I know personally from your network that you're connected to just one boatload of BD, proposal, and capture professionals. So I didn't know if that was services that you provided directly, if you recommended others. And I'm not looking for names of people you recommend, but apparently you're doing more in-house now.
We're doing more in-house, but we still make referrals out, because there are things that we're not really looking to do. Because we're more of a publishing company than a consulting company, we're not looking to do people's proposals for them. We help them as part of an implementation rollout, and we do it as part of training. But we're really not trying to be an outsourcing firm or a staff augmentation firm when it comes to business development and proposals.
Okay. Well, I know as past president of APMP, you probably know enough people to recommend who you trust implicitly.
I do. And you know, when customers, you know, have problems and the kind of problems that we don't want to solve, we'll refer them out. Really what we're about is making sure that the customer, you know, gets taken care of, whether it's us or whether it's somebody that we trust.
Okay. What about the other contracting issues facing the market right now? We have the fixed price contracts, strategic sourcing, and the budget implications. How are these impacting how companies are going through the bidding process? Are they broadening their scope or narrowing their scope? What do you see?
Some of it's kind of funny, because when it comes to budgets and things, and right now there's enough uncertainty out there that the flow of RFP releases has been impacted, and that's a very real problem. But in a long-term perspective, government contracting is the most stable market that you can be in. But it's funny because, like, when the economy is not doing so well, when there's a recession on, most government contractors aren't even impacted. But because people live in an environment where there's a recession on, they still want to panic just like everybody else. Long term, I'm not sure that really makes a lot of sense. But right now, there's a definite problem, and but it's more driven, I think, by uncertainty that is about the budget process than it is about the actual budget numbers.
Okay. What about FSSI? Does that impact any of this, the strategic sourcing initiative? You know, let me be more specific. When we go back to the first FSSI application to GSA, it was on the office supplies schedule 75. The RFP went out, and from 540 vendors on that contract, only about 20 or so actually won the bid. Is what you offer something that they could leverage if FSSI comes to their schedule?
Yes. Because excellent. I'm all about how do you position and how do you strategize in order to win no matter what circumstances you find yourself in. So when something like FSSI comes up, I don't really get involved in trying to figure out, you know, what the regulatory changes are going to be and what the, you know, new wording is going to be and all of that. What I focus on is, man, how do you compete and how do you bid now that you're in that environment?
Cool. I needed to hear that because I have a number of companies that I advise who are probably facing strategic sourcing sometime between the next 6 and 24 months. So thank you for that. again, my guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl is the principal at CapturePlanning.com, also PropLibrary.com. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl is the principal of CapturePlanning.com, all one word, CapturePlanning.com. And PropLibrary.com. These are repositories of some really phenomenal information on all aspects of business development, capture planning, proposal writing. So get your digits working, get your mouse over there, and take a look at some of this stuff. Carl, thanks again for being on the show. You and I are both massive users of LinkedIn. Tell me why you got involved in LinkedIn initially, and when did you start seeing and leveraging the potential?
I guess I created my profile on LinkedIn a few years ago, very early on, but I never really did anything with it because at that time, LinkedIn just looked like it was for people who were trying to get a job, and I already had my own personal web empire, so I really wasn't in the job seeker market. And so I really didn't, you know, see much use in LinkedIn. I was very much interested in concepts like social networking and forums for group-based collaboration, things that I had done in my own web-based business. So when they set up the LinkedIn Groups feature, I decided to test that out and set up a group there. But even after I had created that group, I really wasn't sure how to best create value out of it or how it would impact my business. But I just sort of went along with the flow for a while, and eventually that group passed, it was probably when it passed around 4,000 members that I started looking at it, noticing that when I send out a group broadcast, I could generate as much activity off of LinkedIn as I was generating off of the weekly newsletter that CaptureePlanning.com puts out, and that goes out to 65,000 people.
Yeah, I just signed up.
Yeah, but LinkedIn is highly concentrated. So whereas on the CaptureePlanning.com newsletter, I'm dealing with everybody from the billion-dollar companies all the way down to people that have landscaping businesses who mow lawns and everything in between. So LinkedIn is so much more concentrated that I started looking at that saying, okay, I need to pay more attention to it. And today that group is
7,842 members.
There you go.
I looked at it this morning.
Yeah. We've also opened up subgroups in order to try and target certain special interests and that sort of thing. But now LinkedIn is a lot more than just a place that you go to have an online resume and to look for recruiters. And the kind of discussions that we're having in the group are very interesting. In fact, these days, a lot of the articles that I publish in my own newspaper actually start as discussions on LinkedIn, because I can toss out an issue that I'm thinking about writing about, and I can toss out a position on that issue and then discuss it with other people, and it becomes a much more interactive kind of thing.
Okay. Now, the original name of your group was what?
Oh, CaptureePlanning.com Business Development Proposal Management, I think.
Yeah. And you altered that not too long ago to, what is it, Business Development Proposal Writing. There's three or four phrases in there, but the reason was what?
Well, LinkedIn themselves changed. They changed how they organized the group listings, and at that point, I realized that the group would be seen by more people and become more available if I targeted certain keywords. And the name of my company is frankly less important than the topics. So I basically reversed it. I put the name of my company instead of at the beginning, I stuck it all the way at the end and focused on the topics that people were looking to discuss.
And as a result, last week you got 84 new members, which is truly phenomenal growth. So, and 7,842 members, that it's by far not the largest group, but when you consider the narrow niche scope of that group, that's a lot of BD folks, man.
where it's really fun is when I go to trade shows and events and run into people and they're like, hey, I know you.
Yeah, like, and they know you
and
from
I'm
LinkedIn.
Like, I'm scratching my head trying to figure out where I know them from, and I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be speaking at APMP in the near term for one of the dinners, and whenever I speak anywhere, it used to be about 10 to 15% of the audience would know me from LinkedIn. Now it's closer to 50%. So if you're active there, and you are, and we'll get into that in a minute too, things can change. But I want to talk about group management issues for a moment, because you and I both know, and we've seen groups that may be large, but they are so mismanaged that a lot of members just don't go there anymore. There's spam in there, discussions, postings that have nothing to do with the scope of the group. So... You have, again, a strong growth curve. How do you monitor the members? How do you have a criteria for letting people in and not letting people in?
I let anybody in that that is a real person, that isn't going to be a problem. I'd like to be able to just simply say I let anybody in, but
we
it's
don't.
Not quite like that anymore. There are a lot of fake profiles on LinkedIn, and a lot of them follow recognizable patterns. Like, I can tell you at a certain time of day that I'm going to get two or three new fake profiles, and they'll be from somebody who's either in Australia or in one of the same time zones that Australia covers. I know that because most of the profiles will say that the person went to school in Australia and they post at the right time of day for Australia to be waking up in the morning.
Right.
But there are any number of groups from different places. So I just look for the pattern, and when I see it, I have two options. I either restrict that person's ability to post, or I just delete the account before they get a chance. And I only delete them when I'm certain that they're not going to be a contributor to the group.
When they put the jewelry sale up, or I've seen all manner. But
I'm actually starting to see things like diet pill sale postings.
Yeah. I'm just all kinds of weird stuff, but I mean, for you, that's got to be hard. I'm hoping your wife is your partner on this, right?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that you have some help monitoring the 84 plus people a week who sign up to make sure that everybody is kosher.
Those are the easy ones, actually, because when they're completely unrelated to the topic, it's an easy delete. But the difficult ones are the people who are either in a semi-related area, like you get a lot of people who do websites, web developers. A lot of them are from other countries, and they want to post about their web hosting business. Well, okay, that's an easy delete. But when they start talking about marketing-related things that are also web-related, then you have to pause and think about whether that's truly applicable or not.
Whether it's germane, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then you get people who are actually in the business, government contractors and consultants, who sometimes stray outside the group rules and post things that are closer to spam than they are to being, a discussion oriented topic,
new product, etc.
Right, yeah. And those you really have to think about, and sometimes email the person and give them a little bit of guidance, and those are the ones that end up taking the time.
Yeah, we're going to come back to this. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll discuss a little more on LinkedIn, a few other things when we get back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Carl Dixon. Carl is the principal of CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. Again, these are robust sites when it comes to information on the business development, capture, and proposal writing side of the government contracting business. Go there, take a look at these things. Take a look at his group on LinkedIn as well. Just type in business development or go to Carl Dixon's profile and scroll down to his groups and click on it. Carl, let's talk a little more about LinkedIn before we migrate. I know that you have 500 plus connections on LinkedIn. I'm not going to ask you how many, but what is your personal criteria for connecting with people on LinkedIn?
I seek out people that I actually want to interact with, which turns out to be fairly rare. But because I do a lot of publishing, I get tons of incoming requests from customers at captureplanning.com and people who have read the articles that I publish. And I have no idea when somebody comes in and I don't recognize the name, whether it's one of them or not. So I tend to be fairly loose in terms of, you know, when I have an incoming request, I'll generally accept those. But for me, the interaction on LinkedIn is more about the groups than it is about getting to people one at a time and interacting with them that way.
Well, I know you are active in discussions on groups outside of your own group. You've got a number of discussions out there right now. First one that caught my eye was 65 real world teaming tips. So this you know, that's a cool topic, because teaming is a hot button right now, especially with the number of proposals or RFPs shrinking. More people want to get on other people's teams.
Yeah, that's a great publication too, because I'm not actively working for a government contractor or and I'm not, you know, trying to do a lot of consulting. So I can actually say some things about teaming that
people need
may
to
not
hear.
Be completely political correct, but from a strategic and tactical perspective, people need to know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you give the, that's why the real world teaming tip. So things they need to know that they may not hear, you know, at an SBA sponsored event.
Right.
Where they hear, oh yes, go and get on the Lockheed team. Ooh, like that's simple. but we hear this.
Yep.
You know, we hear this. But I know you're active in a lot of other groups. You're active in my group, and I see you. I think we probably share at least a dozen or so groups, because I see you frequently there outside again of your group. But let's talk a little bit about some of the other Web 2.0 tools. Do you blog at all?
I don't think of myself as a blogger, because I started CaptureePlanning.com before blogs really even existed. So, and I stuck with that approach instead of switching over and starting what everybody thinks of as a blog. But there's a whole lot of overlap between what I do and what bloggers do. So I never I never really know how to think of myself when it comes to blogging. But yeah, I probably do.
Okay. Podcasts? You do any of those?
I haven't. The audio-only format, unless you have a channel like you do with your show, I never really saw the value of that. Today might be a good time to get into podcasting because of smartphones and iPods, but the government contracting community isn't exactly the fastest to adopt new technologies. So when podcasting first came out and there was a whole lot of buzz about it, it was in the consumer electronics area, but government contractors wouldn't have recognized the term.
Yeah, I mean, my show is actually available, or was, I'm not sure if it still is or not, I wasn't responsible for this, but you could download it from iTunes. And, you know, I didn't know this for a long time until somebody said, that's where I listen to it. I'm going, you know, go to the show archives. It's right there. You know, strange. But you're right. I don't see or hear about a lot of people in our market doing the podcast side. And that's always kind of baffled me, because a podcast can be 5 minutes. It can lead into a broader topic, but it can whet the appetite to drive people to, you know, your LinkedIn site, your proposal sites. But again, I just don't see or hear a lot of people using those here. So what about webinars?
I do a ton of webinars. In fact, this year I'll be doing just about one every week. And part of that is to make sure that prop library is a better learning tool that people have a chance to actually interact with a live person where they can ask questions and all of that. And it's also, we're also doing what I call get to know us sessions. Once a month I do an online meeting where people who are not members can show up, and I'll give them guided tours or talk about things with them as a way to make that personal connection.
Cool. Do you indulge in other social networks for business?
Let's see. I have I'm on Facebook, I see little or no business value out of Facebook. Other types of businesses could get business value out of it, but our market is such a narrow technical niche that I've experimented with it and not been impressed with the results.
What about any of the other platforms that are built on Ning, like GovLoop or TFCN? Do you ever indulge in those?
I've visited just to see what it was, but my own, there's only so many hours in a day, and my own channel is sufficiently large and deep enough that I very rarely have to go somewhere else in order to make contact with people.
Right, and frankly, with nearly 8,000 members, soon to be 8,000 members in your group, again, time well spent, obviously. Any last thoughts for our listeners today? You don't have to.
They have a tremendous opportunity with things like LinkedIn to get out and interact with their customers, and I think that people should learn about it and take advantage of it. But when they do it, make sure you do it from the customer's perspective and not your own. There's a lot of people that jump onto LinkedIn and go in the groups, and they start talking about themselves and their business and what they do and their way of attracting people is to get on there and say, "Hi, here's what we do." And that's not really the best way to go about it. I mean, you have an opportunity to find out what problems your customer has and discuss what works and what doesn't work. And that's incredibly valuable information to have. So start discussions with them. Don't just hit them over the head with your capability statement or your elevator speech. Get in there in an inquisitive way and let them do all the talking, and you'll be able to gain information that you never would have been able to gain in any other way.
Cool. Carl, greatly appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. Carl Dixon is the principal of CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. One more time, go there. There's a ton of information here, and it's great stuff. Sign up for his newsletter while you are there. This is not my day job. If your company needs to maximize the power of LinkedIn or ensure your marketing program is paying top dividends, drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.